Thank you. Welcome. We're just waiting for the queue from up the back to kick things off. Welcome back after lunch on, does this count as day two or day one? Sort of, yesterday was day zero because we're developers, right? So today's day one. That's fair enough. Okay, cool. My name's Andrew Coates. We're going to chat about a few things. But before we start chatting about anything, I want to tell you a little story. This is Nathan. Well, it's actually not Nathan, but Nathan is a mate of my kids who finished school at the end of last year and is at university studying science, but he's also working part-time as a pizza delivery lad. Yeah, happens all the time, right? Need that sort of gig. And Nathan, every fortnight, Nathan has to send off to his boss his availability about when he's going to be able to do shifts in the next 2 weeks. And his boss builds a spreadsheet and sends an email back to Nathan, giving him when his shifts, which is great. And Nathan diligently shoves those shifts into his phone so he's never not in the right place at the right time. Awesome, right? Great system. Except the problem is that it's not just Nathan who drives. There's about 10 drivers at this in this pizza delivery shop, and inevitably, someone is going to not be able to do the shift for some reason, and things need to get changed around. So the boss changes things on the master spreadsheet and sends emails out to the people who are concerned. And most of the time, those emails get actioned and people put the right thing in the, back in their phone. They get the email, put the right thing back in their phone. But probably 5% of the time that doesn't happen. And it probably happens a couple of times over the fortnight where that hasn't, where the communication hasn't happened properly. So we're now down to about 80% of the time where people are in the right place at the right time. So that means about 20% of the time there's a driver not there when they're supposed to be, which is the worst situation, or almost as bad, there's a driver there when they shouldn't be. That's not a great thing. So what we're going to do is we're going to chat about how we might fix that, and I'll tell you a bit of story at the end about how we went about fixing it in Nathan's shop. My name's Andrew Coates, as I said, and we're going to talk deep diving into how do you take advantage of the Office 365 platform using the Microsoft Graph to build awesome applications. And actually, I had to be fairly formal about the presentation title. They wouldn't let me call it, you know, giving your application Office 365 superpowers. I don't know why they wouldn't, because that's essentially what we're talking about. Yeah, Office 365 is an awesome way of giving your application some amazing things for pretty much, well, let's not call it for free, because that's, you know, free is the appropriate asterisk next to it, but for very little additional cost, and probably for less than you'd pay for building it yourself. Now, who's been to some Office Dev sessions already this week, yesterday or today? Anyone? No one much? Did anyone go to the Graph session? Yeah, that was an Office session. So when I asked before if you'd been in an Office session, you could have put your hand up then. It's okay. There's basically three things we talk about when we talk about Office development. And we're only going to talk about one of them today, but I want to make sure that you understand that as a more broad platform, we can talk about three different things. We talk about add-ins and web parts, we talk about web and device applications, and we talk about voice, videos, and connectors and bots. And you know, so the first one is taking what you've got where people are already working in Outlook or Excel or Word and giving them some additional functionality. We call that extending the Office platform, where what they take their, they add additional functionality into whatever it is their users are doing all the time. They don't take their users out of context, essentially. So if their user needs to be able to add something to the CRM from an Outlook email, there's no need to go off to the CRM and log in separately and copy and paste things. You click a button inside Outlook and add that record into the CRM. Yeah, fairly straightforward stuff. And we've seen it with all sorts of things in Word. There's lookups. There's in PowerPoint. There's graphical things in Excel. There's a bunch of stuff around additional visualizations and a whole lot of other stuff as well. Some very, very cool add-ins that are available. And of course, nowadays those add-ins don't just run on Windows. They run on Excel. They run on the iOS. They run on Android. They run on Mac. They run on the web. And this is because of this new development platform we've got for building Office add-ins. And I'm not going to talk about that at all today, other than that little bit there. On the other side, the far right-hand side, we've got voice and video and bots and connectors. And this is really, really cool stuff as well. I'm not going to talk about it at all today. But you saw some of it yesterday in the keynote, yeah? There's some really, really neat things with this idea of application APIs being surfaced in a way that allow people to interact with them naturally. Very, very cool stuff. And it's kind of fallen into the Office platform piece, although it's much wider than that. It's kind of fallen into the Office platform piece at Microsoft just because that's the team that kind of took it up. And those are the people who are working on things where you could surface things like Skype and Skype bots and those sorts of things as part of that process. But we call that part of the Office platform as well. The bit we are going to concentrate on today is this piece in the middle. Building applications that take advantage of the real power of Office 365. Does anyone build applications here? Yeah, awesome, good. You're in the right place. I'm in the right place. That's fantastic. How often do you get in? I mean, always as a developer, you get into the question of should I buy stuff or should I build it? How much should I build myself and how much should I take advantage of stuff people have already written? Now, I put it to you that if you're a developer and you want to build your own emailing system, yeah, you might need your head read. If you're a developer and you want to build your own system for managing files, you might want your head read. If you're a developer and you want your own system for doing calendaring, yeah, it's probably not the smartest thing in the world to do. If you're a developer and you want to manage and stream video, again, someone's done that. If you're a developer and you want to manage the hierarchy of an organization with things like login and multi-factor authentication, don't do it yourself. There are things out there that do it for you. Similarly, if you're a developer, you're probably not going to write your own generic validation routines or object relationship mappers. Those are things that people have done for you. And so taking advantage of the great power of the frameworks that are out, the frameworks and platforms that are out there, is a very smart thing to do as a developer. And we're going to look at how you can take advantage of that in Office 365 using the Microsoft Graph to go and connect back into all of those powerful things. Now, the big problem that Nathan's boss had, and Nathan had and all the drivers, is that they didn't have a single point of truth. There's no single source of truth for what the current, that everyone can access, for what the current status of the roster is. That single source of truth sits either on a notice board or on a spreadsheet somewhere back in the Pizza Hut boss's office. The place where you really want that single source of truth is where everybody can see it. And to make it available to everyone to see, you need to put it on some sort of cloud platform. And you can write that yourself if you want to, but there are a bunch of cloud platforms out there that already have things like calendaring on them. And so taking advantage of that is a very good thing. Now, one of the things, I'll tell you what we, at the end, I'll tell you how we did solve the problem. But one of the things you could do is just say, well, I'm just going to give everyone an Office 365 login on my machine, on my domain, on the pizzahouse.com domain. That's awesome. But then everyone's got to remember their own new set of logins and they've got to be bothered actually connecting to your system and so on. It's not really a great solution. What you'd rather do is that things happen automatically and you have a single source of truth that everyone connects to in their natural way, using the applications they already use or a single application that they use for a bunch of different things. So we'll keep that in mind. So we've been able to get at the Office platform pieces, Office 365 pieces, programmatically for some time now. Has anyone ever written anything that gets at the Outlook REST API or OneDrive or any of those other sorts of things? Up until moderately recently, before the Office Graph, we could get at Active Directory and OneDrive and Skype and Outlook and Exchange and SharePoint through these discrete endpoints, these discrete REST APIs. And we could do it for work and what we call work and school accounts or organizational accounts, which were secured by Azure Active Directory, separately from very similar sort of functionality on the consumer side of things, what we call personal accounts with Hotmail.com or Outlook.com or Live.com accounts. And you can see here that the concept of mail is fairly common across both those things, but they were completely different interfaces secured by completely different systems and had no common functionality between them, which didn't make a lot of sense. And in fact, to say that the API styles and endpoints were diverse is probably doing them a service. That's being kind to them. There are a lot of different ways that you can get at the various endpoints on the back end. Has anyone done any coding against any of those? No one? Yeah, a couple? Yeah. And I mean, it's not difficult stuff. It's just REST calls, but for each one you've got to know the shape of the return payloads. You've got to know the API calls that can be made. You've got to authenticate and keep a token and manage the life cycle of a token for each of those endpoints. You've got to make sure that those people have got access to those things for a start in an easy way. You've got to go and discover what those endpoints are. If you've ever done anything with the Office 365 individual endpoints, there's a service you've got to call before you call any other service called the Discovery Service, where you log into the Discovery Service and find out what the actual endpoint is you need to call to go and find the thing you want. So that's kind of two steps removed. All that stuff is a bit of a pain. Not that it's impossible, and plenty of people have written some great applications with it, but it doesn't make it really straightforward to do. So the Microsoft Graph API is basically a wrapper around all of those endpoints that gives us a single API, a single set of endpoints, a single endpoint for accessing a whole bunch of things. And you can see here that at the moment, the Graph API is very person-centric. And in fact, the user is in the center of what mainly what we do on the graph at the moment. This is going to change as we go on, and we'll talk a bit about that as we go through. But this API is basically for getting at data, so finding out whether someone, who someone is, what documents they're working on, what their email is, updating their calendar, viewing videos that they've got, whatever it happens to be. Yeah, looking at the messages, we can go and find out what groups they're in, who they're working with. Got a lot of great information about that, but of course, it's not just about the individual. To be a graph, you need to be able to walk around it, traverse it, and so on. So what we need to be able to do is go and traverse that, step through that data and find out, for example, here's a great example of an endpoint of a call that says, for this particular thing on OneDrive, go and tell me who it was. Go and give me the details of the user who last modified it. Not just who it was, but actually the object details of that person, and then I can use that person to go and navigate through and find out who their manager is and who I should escalate to for that person has done the wrong thing. You could easily blame someone by finding out who the last modified was and who broke my system, all that sort of stuff. But that's fairly straightforward to do because you can walk the graph, and that's the beauty of having a graph. And the lovely thing about this is that this brings together a bunch of different disparate back-end systems. So if you want to go and find out who last modified, all the details of the person who last modified this particular file. So I can go off to the OneDrive API and call the OneDrive API and find out the details about that file, which includes some sort of probably a UPN for the user who last modified it. But then I've got to go and take that UPN and go and call the Active Directory API and find out a bunch of things about them. And that might not be enough information. There might be additional information about that person stored in Exchange that I've got to go and get as well. And so there might be three or four calls that have got to be made to go and find out all the things I need to know about this. And the Graph API wraps all that stuff up and behind the scenes takes care of it all for you and just returns you the information you need. The other thing the Graph does is it gives us access to a bunch of insights or intelligence about what's going on. We get really interesting information about who is, for example, who's trending around a particular topic or document. The hierarchy that's defined in Active Directory is usually not completely representative of the way people work in an organization. Yeah. So most of you are developers here, yeah? Who works in a big organization as a developer? Anyone? Yeah, okay. And so to get to the marketing people from your part of the Active Directory, you probably have to go up three or four levels, maybe five or six levels, and then back down the other side. And so, by the time you and the Active Directory person you and the marketing person are connected, you've got to go back almost before fungus deviated from the animal line, because that's what marketing people are, right? But we all know that in fact there are some good marketing people, and we have to work with some of them. And it would be great to be able to find out who my team is working with in the organization without having to go up and down the hierarchy. And this concept of insights, this idea of data turning into intelligence, which we can action, is something that we've been working on really hard. And the Microsoft Graph exposes that information through a set of insights endpoints that give us all that great level of information. We can work out, and we gather that insight based on who's working on documents together, who's having meetings together, who's sending emails to each other, and who's having Skype conversations with each other, and how long they're for, and all those sorts of things. There's a whole bunch of machine learning that goes on behind the scenes to let you build a really good picture of the shape of your organization that's not defined just by the hierarchy. It really truly is a graph. And then finally, the thing that Microsoft Graph allows us to do is authenticate against two different types of authentication systems. With the Azure Active Directory authentication, which is what we call work of school accounts, and then the consumer authentication, which is what we call personal accounts, so Outlook.com or Live.com and so on. So those that bringing that together under one roof into this single endpoint, this graph.microsoft.com endpoint, is a really significant advantage to us as developers, because there's a whole lot of busy work that we don't have to worry about. Someone else can do. Now, you'll see me doing this a lot when I do developer presentations. It's not because I'm flatulent. It's really because I want someone else to be doing that work. A couple of years ago at TechEd in Australia, we had a mantra that we started every developer session with, which was only write the code that only you can write. Only write the code that only you can write. And it was really all about how do you take advantage of the great platforms and frameworks that are out there. And the graph is a very good example of that. In fact, I thought it was appropriate, given that we're in New Zealand, that this is kind of the mantra. It's the one endpoint to rule them all. Yeah, and in the darkness bind them or something. I don't know, I bet they're at the last bit. So what has happened? Remember last we said that before the Microsoft Graph we had this, where we had all these different ways of getting at information. And now what we have is this. And that, can you see how much easier that is? As developers, straight away, you can see it's blue, so it's better, right? But we have got this great way now of accessing all of that, the same information we had before. All of the stuff that was in here with their disparate endpoints is now available through a single set of endpoints, the one endpoint to rule them all, with a single auth method of auth that it then goes off and behind the scenes does token handling and passes tokens around and queries a bunch of different endpoints for you and so on. The Microsoft Graph is not a new set of services. It is a wrapper around an existing set of services plus some additional insights that go along with it. And this is really important to know, because remember we talked about this single source of truth? If we wrote the Microsoft Graph and it was an additional or separate way of doing things, then that would be bad. Because now there would be two or three or four or five or six ways of getting or writing to or accessing this information. Because what we really want is a single way of doing that stuff. We want it to be as easy as possible. So we want to make sure that if you're still using the old way of accessing, say, the Outlook REST APIs, and then you also introduce doing it with the Microsoft Graph, that you're not doing something different. Behind the scenes, the Graph is still using the Outlook REST APIs. Yeah, so it's still going through exactly the same process. You're not introducing any deviation from what you'd expect. It's a single way of doing things, a single point of truth, just a convenient wrapper around those things that make it easier for us as developers to do the things we want to do. Now, there's one little caveat I want to add in here, is that because that the graph is a wrapper around the existing application-specific endpoints, when we add new stuff to those existing application-specific endpoints, it takes some time for that to flow through to the graph, to the wrapper to get regenerated for those things. And so if there are brand new things that are getting added to, say, OneDrive or Outlook or Skype, then those things will probably turn up first in the application-specific endpoints, which is okay, because by the time they get to be the wrapper, even if we have changed written our application to use the application-specific endpoints, moving it across to use the graph, A, probably won't change very much in terms of the shape of the endpoints themselves, because we're likely to adopt something similar to what is in the application-specific endpoints. But B, even if that changes completely, and some of our applications use the application-specific endpoints and some of our applications now use the graph, the same call is being made behind the scenes, and so we're not in danger of mucking things up. Yeah, we've got lots of, as I said, single endpoint. There's a bunch of different things we can do. I've listed a few of them, by no means all of the things you can do with a graph. But, you know, as you can see, they all start with the same thing, which is pretty cool. Now, at Ignite in the US, we made a bunch of announcements about, and look, this is simply, don't worry too much about what the details of this are. We'll look at some of those in some more detail in a demo a bit later on. But we made a bunch of announcements about what things that happened with graph at Ignite in the US a month or so ago, and some of these you may have heard of and some of you may not have. The one I'm the most excited about is this concept of hybrid environments. Now, we've started off very, very, in a very small way with this. When we say hybrid environments, we are insisting that if you are running Exchange on premises, and this is only for Exchange at this stage, and as long as you're running Exchange on premises 2016, the latest updates of that, okay, then you can make a call. So you can set your hybrid environment up so that graph.microsoft.com will go and find, auto-discover your hybrid environment and return the things that you'd expect it to do. So someone will go and log in. You go to graph.microsoft.com. You provide a set of credentials that your Active Directory understands, but is backed onto your on-premises Exchange server. Yeah, and then a call to me/messages for that particular user will go not to the Office 365 data center to get the information, but to go to your automatically go to your Exchange server and get that information, which is pretty neat. Now you can have a truly hybrid environment where you have some of your users in the cloud and some of your users on premises, as long as they got off Exchange 2016, latest version, blah, blah, blah. And your application will work the same way because the endpoint is still graph.microsoft.com. And behind the scenes, we disambiguate or go and discover whether that particular user who's logged into that application is hosted in Office 365 or on your on-premises center. That's pretty neat stuff. And we're going to continue to evolve this hybrid functionality for a bunch of other things that you might have on premises. We did a bunch of releases of things in the Graph API. Tomorrow, in particular, I'm going to be talking about the Excel and Group APIs that went from preview to general availability. And I'll do that in the context of building a cross-platform application with Xamarin Forms. We looked at OpenType extensions, and I'll talk about that a bit later on as well. Went to general availability, and I'll talk about what some of these things mean with GA and preview in a sec as well. We got access to mail tips and online meeting URLs. So if anyone uses Office 365 now or even Outlook 2016 with Exchange 2016, you'll know that when you put someone's email address in the to field, if they're outside your organization or if they're on, particularly if they've got their out of office setting on or whatever, you get a little mail tip that says, hey, Jimmy's out of office and here's what his out of office says. Are you sure you still want to send it? We've now got programmatic access to that set of information as well, so your application can now get at that information too. If you've got a meeting that you've got an online URL for, a Skype for Business meeting, for example, that gets exposed as part of the meeting details. This is something that caused a fair bit of cheering and carrying on at Ignite New Zealand. We now have Graph access to SharePoint lists and libraries. Now, Graph, it's one of those interesting things. Have we got any SharePoint devs in the room? Yeah, a few, I thought we might. SharePoint's been one of those things that's kind of been, ignored's the wrong word, because they've been working really, really hard at it, but it hasn't had a lot of public-facing change until recently when the SharePoint framework came out. And we've been asking about it with Graph for a long time, because Graph is supposed to be the one endpoint to rule them all for all Microsoft, particularly Microsoft Office stuff, but really all Microsoft services. And they said, yeah, we're doing it. And now they've done it. They haven't done it fully. So it's only SharePoint Lists and Libraries. We'll talk a bit about what the details are of that in a later slide. But it is showing that this graphization, if I just invented a new word, graphation, is it graphation? Yeah, we'll go with graphation for now. The graphization, yeah, whatever. This creation of the Microsoft Graph on top of all these different services is proceeding, and it's continuing. And there's a lot of work going on. We've released a few things. File handlers on SharePoint and OneDrive. We could write file handlers for a while. We wrote file handlers for a while where you could get at a way of, for example, exposing a custom method for editing a document type that SharePoint didn't already understand. We've now written a way of doing it. So for OneDrive, a way of doing that. So for example, if you have a custom file format for your application, you can say to SharePoint or OneDrive, when someone double clicks on that application, don't go off to the Office file handlers to try and work out how to do that. Go over here to my file handler that understands how to render a CAD file or print a schematic or whatever it happens to be. We've also done a lot of work on webhooks. Now, webhooks are pretty cool things. Does anyone not know what webhooks are? Webhooks are basically a subscription model, a publish-subscribe model for the web. And basically it means you can say, I've got a resource that I want to set up a subscription for, and any time that resource changes, I want a call to be made to a URL. So it's basically, I'm going to subscribe to changes on, let's say, a SharePoint list. And whenever something changes in that SharePoint list, let me know. And the let me know is simply, hey, something's changed in that SharePoint list. And then it's my job, when I get notified, to go and say, well, here's my hash that I had last time something changed. Go and tell me what's changed since then. And then the information comes back again. So it's a multi-step process. I go and register my interest. I get notified when something changes. I say, okay, can you tell me what's changed? And then I get the information back about what's changed. Yeah, and that's what webhooks are. So we've done that on calendar and contact items, mail, calendar, and contact items, which is neat. You can set up a webhook on, for example, your inbox. So think you can process stuff that comes into the inbox automatically, for example. You can do it for OneDrive files and folders, which we put into preview now. So when people make changes or update or create a new file or delete one or whatever in a particular file or folder in OneDrive, you can get notified about that and take action. And we also just put into preview SharePoint webhooks for SharePoint lists and libraries. So it's really easy to do that as well. That's not in the graph yet. It's a separate, that's one of those things which is platform specific at the moment. But there is a way of finding that information out that, and getting that back to process too. And then the other thing we announced is that there's a whole bunch of libraries, and I'll talk about why this is so important later on. There's a whole bunch of libraries that we've made available for a lot of different technologies and platforms. We've made generally available Android and .NET, but there are also in preview Python, Ruby, JavaScript, Node, actually iOS as well in Objective-C is up there too in preview. So all those things are available for you to use to get at the graph in a strongly typed So a wrapper around the wrapper, if you like, which is pretty neat. So we talked a bit about, some things being in GA and some things being in preview. So actually, is it really one endpoint to rule them all, or is it two? Because what's the difference between this GA and preview thing? So we have a bunch of production-ready endpoint or production-ready services in the graph. And these are our V1, what we call our V1 endpoints. So in V1, we get to do, we talk to users and data, and we'll talk about data extensions later on. In a minute, we'll talk about what they are. We can read and write from OneDrive and Excel and Mail and Calendar and contacts and groups and directories and webhooks. These are things that are all pretty cool. Yeah. Now, I did say, in fact, let's have a look at how that might work. Let's duck across and have a look at the V1 endpoint. Awesome. So I don't need that, what I really want. Is this. So the first thing I've done up here on the left-hand side is I've gone to graph.microsoft.io. Graph.microsoft.io. And in fact, if there's one URL you write down today, that's it. Graph.microsoft.io. Everything else is linked somewhere from there. I'll give you a bunch of other URLs as well. But if there's only one, that's it. Graph.microsoft.io. And it takes you to this beautiful this landing page with a bunch of things. And I'll talk about some of the other things that are on there a bit later on. But the couple of things I'll call out right now are there's a Getting Started tab, which we'll look at some more detail in later on. And Getting Started gets you started on a number of different platforms. There is the changelog. And this is one of my favorite things because this tells you how do you keep up with all this stuff that's gone from GA to preview? Preview to GA. How do we brought new stuff into preview? Well, here's how you keep up. We've got a specific URL that allows you to look at exactly what's been done when. So when we say we release stuff, here's all the hybrid deployment support details. Here's the stuff we did in OneDrive. It's what we did in August. Here's the stuff that's gone into beta, etc., etc., etc. That's pretty neat. Some great samples and SDKs. So remember, I said there's SDKs. For various things, the iOS SDK is in preview, the Android SDK is out, and lots of other things coming there as well. A bunch of code samples. Even if we haven't got an SDK for things, for example, on PHP, haven't got an SDK yet, but we have got a lot of code samples. So if you want to know how to do stuff in PHP, you can. But the thing I'm going to show you now is this thing called the Graph Explorer, and the Graph Explorer is basically essentially a Postman interface. It's a way of making calls to the Microsoft Graph and getting the information it sends back, the JSON it gets back, in a standard way. Now, what it does for you is wraps up all of the authentication piece and handles all the token and stuff to send stuff around, and also does some smart stuff around allowing you to hyperlink down into children and parents from the inside the return information. So the first thing I'm going to have to do is sign in. And I'm signed in with my, because I've signed in this session before, it signed me in automatically, but I've signed in with my on my demo account. Has anyone not got an Office 365 test account? Yeah, if you need one, easy, dev.office.com/devprogram. Dev.office.com/devprogram and sign up there. You'll get a free 1-year subscription to Office 365, which originally was only of limited use because it was only with a single mailbox. But just recently, I think this is rolled out everywhere now. We've announced that we're getting 25 mailboxes on those test accounts, those developer tenants. So that's pretty cool. I'm signed in. In fact, I'm signed in with one that's still only got a single user on it because I got in too early. But it is actually the same account as I've got logged in over here. Can I close that? No. All right, I'll snooze it and see what happens. I'm logged in over here into the same account with my Office Online. Yep, so on the right-hand side, Office Online, on the left-hand side, logged in with the same account into the graph. So I can find out the details about who I'm logged in as. So if I go to graph.microsoft.com/v1/me, and let's see if we can zoom this in a smidgen. All right. We get a bunch of information back about me, which is cool. It might be a little bit too zoomed in. We'll see in a sec. Yeah, it is a bit too zoomed in. I can find out, remember I said we can traverse the graph? I can find out who my manager is. Now, as a user, I'm not going to be typing this stuff in, right? This wouldn't make any sense. So you can imagine what's going on behind the scenes here. I've built an application that someone has logged into and provided their credentials. My generic application says I know about the person who's logged in because I send a call off to graph.microsoft.com/v1/me. And that's whoever is logged in. All that information comes back and I can use that information to interact with that person. I can say in the application, do you want to see what file or what's in your mailbox? So I can say messages. And off it goes. And queries the Exchange server, and eventually comes back. I've had this issue twice today now, where for some reason messages has just timed out. But what's fixed it for some reason is I've gone off to events instead. Okay, so here are all the events in my calendar. So let's have a look at my calendar. So you know, there's the Microsoft Graph session up there. And you can see it's here as well. If I duck down here, that's tomorrow's session. Come down a bit further. There we are. We've got the deep dive into the Microsoft Graph API. Yeah, so there's the same information that's on the right-hand side as the left-hand side coming out of the... coming out in JSON. And all the information you need about the messages of the event is there. I can do some other things. Because this is a standard OData endpoint, I can say, just give me the subject and the ID. Select equals. It would help, wouldn't it? And so now I'm getting back a much reduced set of data. Maybe that's all I want to display, so that's pretty easy, right? And it's cool that you can do that. I can filter as well with dollar filter clauses. I can skip, I can get the top, whatever. All the stuff you can do with OData you can do in here, which is pretty nice. All right, no one sounds all that impressed yet. So let's go and obviously I think I might have been a little bit optimistic with the second appointment up here. So let's go and find that one. I'll get an ID for it. Ah. All right. So this happens sometimes. It's all very well making these things hyperlinked, but if you can't copy and paste them, it's not as helpful. This is giving me an error because I'd done a filter on it and it didn't pass that through properly. But there, here is that event itself now in its entirety, but only that event. So I've just gone back and got a singular one by saying, give me event slash whatever the ID is. Yep, awesome. So what I can do now is, it's all very well having this signed autographs. I think probably I should change it to something a bit more realistic though. So instead of just doing a get, I can do a patch on that same piece. And I can say, well, I actually want to patch it and pass a bit of JSON in that says the subject is actually, it's lowercase s, always gets me. I don't know. All right, and off we go. So now you can see I've patched that thing and it's automatically come up in the calendar. Now this is pretty cool stuff. Remember what I said about a single source of truth? Doesn't matter how I get at that particular appointment. Doesn't matter whether I'm looking at it in the calendar view or through my application, which I'm proxying through the Graph Explorer. Makes no difference because there's a single place where the data actually live. And this is the beautiful thing about using Office 365 as your back end. Now you've got rather than having to synchronize events or think about some way of making sure that the information gets passed from one place to another, if you keep it in the same place and just view it from different angles, then you won't run into that issue. So that's pretty neat stuff. I can, if I'm feeling really pathetic, I can change the... where are we? The end time. So let's do this. And maybe change it to wait an extra half an hour. Now I'm going to stand outside the room for an hour like this. It's all good. But that's pretty neat stuff, I reckon. And in fact, probably, to be realistic, it's not going to happen either way. So I can actually just send this and delete it, and it'll go away. So I don't have to wait forlornly anymore. But if you do an autograph, come... No, just kidding. I can't imagine ever doing that. That's very funny. Of course, it's not just things like events. I can do stuff like this. I can say... me slash drive slash root slash children. And what that's going to do is go off to my OneDrive for Business. What did I do wrong here? Sorry? Oh, delete. Thank you. Yes, I don't want to delete me slash drive. I'm glad that didn't work. Yeah, okay, there's all the files that I have. Unfortunately, they're all still there. That could have been fun. Awesome. There's a lot of great information that comes out of this. I can find one of these IDs. Let me find a... in fact, I'll do this. Dollar select equals name, comma, ID. All right. So this... I've probably got... that's book 3.xlsx. So now I should be able to say slash drive slash items slash book 3.xlsx. No. Me drive items. Okay, let's just give it that ID instead. Drive root children. Question mark, dollar select equals. The problem with this is that it doesn't have a undo or a go back. If I hit the back button, I've learnt this the hard way, it actually backs me out not of what I just did then, but the entire web page, and I've got to reload it and start again from scratch. So if you see me going for the back button, just yell at me to stop. All right, so let's go and find book 3 again. That one there, and I'm going to see if I can copy the ID without getting everything. Control C. And now I should be able to say slash me slash drive slash items slash and paste that in there and delete all the extra bits that I had to copy so I didn't hit the hyperlink. And there is the file itself. So let's just see what that looks like, that file. Go back here and we'll go to my OneDrive. And book three looks a bit like this. Yep, awesome. Got a bunch of different things in there. Exciting, you know, lots of cool stuff. You know, there are some cool things. Tomorrow I'm going to concentrate lots more on this 6L stuff. I'll show you a couple little things now, but tomorrow we'll talk about charting and bringing images back and all kinds of things as part of that process. But I can say, okay, let's have a look at this thing. But I want to treat it as a workbook. This is the Excel API piece. So instead of just retreating it to some random file, I want to say, this is a workbook. And I want to know what sheets it's got in it. So what we're hoping to get back here is a single object, sheet object, called sheet one, right? That's what we've got, a single sheet in this thing. Let's just see how we get on. Awesome. We've got a single object, which is sheet one. So I can say, okay, so with that sheet one, tell me what's in some of the bits. So I can say worksheets, and I can say sheet one. And then I can say range address equals A1 to B3. What have I done wrong here? Ah, I've got my international keyboard on, so it's not A, it's A umlaut. Not what I was after. Window space, let's turn that off and go there and make that an A. Beautiful. And now I'm getting back all the details about what's in A1 to B3 as JSON. That's pretty cool stuff now, because not only can I get it, as I'll show you tomorrow, I can patch it, I can post it, I can make tables, I can make charts, I can get the information back, I can use it as a back-end calculation service, I can call the native Excel functions if I want to find out the net present value of something, I can just call into the Excel API and say, find me the net present value. Or so what's the p-value for this particular set of data given this standard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anything that Excel can do, I can now do through my app. And again, it's something I don't have to write. It's a library I don't have to maintain and test and distribute. All that stuff's already there. I've got excited about that enough, I think, perhaps, but, you know, I am excited. Did I want to show off anything else here? Oh, yeah, there's one more thing I wanted to show off here, which is really, I think, really, really cool. Let's go back to here. Me, now, delete, / contacts. Now, I've got a bunch of people in here. In fact, let's just do a question mark, dollar select, display name, comma, email addresses, I think it's called. Address, ADDRESS. Okay, so I've got, I think, four contacts in here. Let me go back and find them. I'll show you what they look like. People. No, oh, my contacts. Yep, Harry Highpants, Joe Bloggs, Mary Smith, and Peter Jones are in there. Now, if you catch me in the street or at the party on Thursday night, I'll give you fair warning. Don't get me started talking about cricket, because I'm a bit of a fan. In fact, tragic is probably not too unreasonable a way of putting it. And one of the things that in my apps I want to keep about the people I meet is what cricket team do they play for, if they play for one, and I want their My Cricket profile. So I don't know if in New Zealand, but in Australia, there's quite a comprehensive set of data you can get about someone, because every club side enters all the information about every game every week, and it's all up on the web. Pretty neat stuff. And so everyone who plays cricket in Australia at pretty much any level has got a My Cricket profile. And so I want to store the club they play for and their My Cricket profile. But sadly, in their infinite wisdom, the people who wrote Exchange or Outlook didn't think that those were important things to include as properties of a contact object. I don't think that's reasonable at all, but that's what happened. I mean, who'd have thought? Fortunately, we have a way of solving this rather vexing issue. And the way we solve it is we add our own properties. We have a way of adding extension properties that get stored as part of contacts and mail, which is pretty neat. So if I go and find Harry Highpants here and grab his ID, which again I'll try and do without being hyperlinked. There's got to be a better way of doing this. In fact, Gina, if you're watching this afterwards, Gina Arenas, who's the program manager of for the Graph, and is responsible for much of the Graph Explorer stuff, huge kudos to her. But Gina, if you're watching this later, fix this, will you? So there's the ID. So if I go Me Contacts and I chuck the ID in there, then there's Harry's details. Awesome. That's great. All Harry's details. Of course, Harry's not yet, you can't see that Harry's got a cricket club or a cricket URL yet. And the reason is that there's a special call you've got to make now and say that I actually want to go and have a look at any extensions that have been added. And I've added these extensions in the coatsy.net domain. And the way you add extensions, I'll show you adding in a sec, but the way you address extensions is you say, I want to see the extensions for a particular namespace, essentially, because you can add lots of different apps could add extensions to a contact object. And so you don't want those things conflicting. So you actually have a namespace that works with it. So my namespace is my coatsy.net namespace. So I'll say net. And you use the reverse DNS. Use the reverse DNS methodology for doing this. So net.coatsy. What did I call it? Extra details. And if I do that, then here's some additional information that's stored about Harry Highpants. Okay? He plays for Collaroy Plateau Cricket Club, the home of cricket on the northern beaches in Sydney, by the way. And here is the URL that gets to Harry's details. And in fact, if I grab that and we do this, in fact, it links to my cricket profile. But you can imagine, now there's me in all my glory, 94 matches for a princely batting average of 10.2, best bowling of 5 for 25 over my 94 matches, and a bowling average of just under 20. So I'm happy with the bowling average, but I could have done with an extra 30 or 40 on the batting average, I think, to be really proud of that. But the point here is that what you can do is now store this additional information in the place, along with the contact themselves, in the place it needs to be stored. And so when my application fires up and it goes and gives me all the contacts that live in my contact list, my application also wants to be able to display links to what club they're from and their my cricket profile. And so it's really easy for me to pull that out and just display that as a URL. But it's stored in a sensible place. It's stored with the contact to whom it belongs. I don't have to go off and put it in some other database and then try and find some link. And then if something else gets updated, my link's gone again. It lives with the person or the object it belongs to. And that makes a heap of sense. And so creating those things is pretty straightforward as well. Now if we go back here, I can go back into Me Contacts extensions. I can go and add another one. I could do a post, for example, on this. Let's just post this stuff. So where are we? Grab this. Excuse my cutting and pasting this, but it's much better than trying to watch me type it. I can now do a post. And the things I've got in here are interesting, I think. I'm saying I'm putting a new open type extension on this particular object. So I'm doing a post to a specific object. That's the contact with its ID. Yeah? And then I'm saying slash extensions, because that's the endpoint that I want to call. And I'm saying add an open type extension. And the name I'm giving it is this namespace, net coatsy extra details. Let's call it this one extra details too. And then maybe I've got a rugby club. Eastern Suburbs. And a different set of information here. Position maybe. supply half. Actually, it doesn't matter what I store in here. This is the beauty of it. It's just some addition, a place where I can put more things. So if I do this post now, that's fine. That information is now stored with Harry. He's not only a cricketer, he's a fly half. Who'd have thought? You know? All fly halves are high pants, aren't they? Isn't that how that works? Okay, you can tell I'm a forward, right? Okay, so are there any questions on that piece of the 1.0 endpoint? Because I think there's some very, very cool things in there. There's heaps more to explore. I've only scratched the surface of some of these things, but I want to make sure you understand that the functionality is all there for you to include in your application so that you can have a really strong way of storing information in the context in which it should live. Okay, let's duck back here. Of course, the endpoint is not just the 1.0 endpoint. We've got things in what we call the beta endpoint as well, the subject to change endpoint. Don't build stuff on production on the beta endpoint because stuff changes, it breaks. Unless you're willing to take that risk if it's going to break. And we don't even guarantee the beta endpoint's up all the time. Yeah? So don't make it a production thing, but there's some very cool stuff coming out of it. So I've highlighted the new things on here. We've added people and social so we can do at mentions inside a message and have that automatically propagated all the way through. We've got tasks in Planner. We've got some very cool stuff in OneDrive. Up until recently, OneDrive uploads were limited to only fairly small files. And now they're as big as the OneDrive will take. And we've got a new way of being able to upload things in chunks, in stages. We're doing some the stuff with SharePoint, which I talked about before. The idea I showed you before was about personal contacts, but we also have access now to organizational contacts. And remember I said that we were that it started off being Office 365 pretty much exclusively. We've now got some additional things creeping in here, including identity protection and privilege and some of the other pieces around Intune are now being exposed as part of the Microsoft Graph. It really is becoming one graph to rule them all. And the one down the bottom here I think is really interesting because OData says that your query syntax needs to start with a dollar sign. And one of the major bits of feedback on the user voice forum was, we hate the dollar sign, take it away. And so now in the beta endpoint, it's optional. So I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. In fact, personally, as someone who's a bit of a purist around things like OData, I think you should just leave the dollar sign where it is and perhaps move on to something a little bit more important. These are the things we're doing next. More hybrid support, additional workloads, more support for webhooks and client libraries for more platforms. And we're also doing a bunch more extensibility stuff, which I think is very important. So not just extensibility by being able to add things to objects like contacts, but also being able to add your own segments on the endpoints. So your application might become part of Microsoft Graph. You can expose bits of your app as part of the graph for your users. It's pretty neat. Okay. All very well doing REST. And this is why I don't really care about the dollar filter, the dollar sign, because I don't want to write REST calls. REST is cool, it's awesome, but we've evolved a little bit from there. We're not all JavaScript people, right? Did I say that out loud? we have evolved a bit from just REST calls. And so what we've done, which I think is really, really neat, is that we've exposed all of this functionality in the V1 branch to a number of different SDKs, through a number of different SDKs for a number of different platforms. We've decoupled the auth, so you auth against you auth against Azure Active Directory, but it doesn't matter what you auth with, it doesn't matter how you get your token, essentially. We've got a number of ways of doing that. And we've got it on a bunch of different platforms, and the primitives are the same. So if you're writing stuff for C#, then it looks a bit like this. If you're writing stuff for Java, then it looks like that. You can see that they are similar sort of constructs. And the reason they're similar sorts of constructs is because they're built with a generator which is available as open source. And so if you have got a language that we don't target with the SDK, but you'd like to have it done, then we've got all of the tools available for you to build exactly that. And in fact, although I said before that we only target the V1.0 endpoint, you can actually run our generator against the beta endpoint and take your chances. Most of the time, it'll do pretty well. And so I'm going to show you, I'm going to give you a link to that, where all that stuff is, a bit later on. I know we haven't got a lot later to go, so we'll just quickly duck into this, because it really is easy to build a UWP app with a Graph SDK. And I was going to build one from scratch, but just in the interest of time, I've got one. Here's one I prepared earlier, Martha Stewart style. She had plenty of time to prepare things, didn't she? As you love that, it's one of my favorite things on a cooking show. They say, well, what we want you to do is you take a large bowl, a large saucepan, and bring it to the boil. Gently place 12 ripe peaches into the bowl. Once it's boiled for 37 and a quarter minutes, take each peach out, run it under cold water, and gently peel off the skin. Here's 15 I did before. As though it's going to take no time at all. All right, so there are things you need to do to write an application that talks to the Microsoft Graph. The first thing you need to do is you need to register the application. And you register the application, he said, bringing this back up. In fact, let's do this. You register the application at the Microsoft Application Registration Portal, apps.dev.microsoft.com. And the cool thing is that you can log into this portal with a Office 365, sorry, an Azure Active Directory account or a Microsoft personal account, which is what I've done here. I've logged in with my personal account. I'm just going to add a new app, and we'll call this Ignite NZ. I'm not actually going to use this one, but I'll show you what it looks like. It goes off and provisions a bunch of stuff behind the scenes. It goes and talks to an Azure Active Directory that you don't ever need to know about. You add a platform, in this particular case, I'm building a mobile application. I get a client ID and a redirect URL. And then I just hit save. And once I hit save, that is now committed into the back end, into the Azure Active Directory at the back end. Awesome. Very cool. Now I go across to Visual Studio, and I hit File New Project. But I'm not going to hit File New Project in this particular case. I'm going to say, here's one I did before. This particular project, in fact, let me run it up and show you what it does, and then I'll show you how it does it. It's probably the easiest way to do this. A little bit better if it's on your screen rather than mine. Okay, beautiful UI, I know. Sensational, stunning, some would even say. I'm going to sign in. Now, because I've run this one before, it's cached my credentials. I'm going to fix that in a sec as well. Oh, no. No, my token's expired. So it pops up a dialogue. And this dialogue is an Azure Active Directory. In fact, is a Microsoft authentication dialogue. At this stage, it doesn't care whether I'm logging in with Office 365 or a personal account. Yeah? And in fact, depending on which one I'll do, it'll go and take me to the right auth portal. I'm just going to do ac@coatsy.net. And now, once I've signed in, boom, it knows who I am. Hello, Andrew Coates. Good start, yeah? Click to send an email. All right, who am I going to send it to? Does anyone else want an email just to see that this works? No? Okay, all right. You trust me? Okay. What's going to happen is it's going to take this email and send it off to me. By default, it sends it to me as well. Mail's sent successfully, and I should hear a ding or something in a minute. If we go back to here and look at my mail. Look, is it 1438? I think it is. And there is an email that just got sent to me. Now, the cool thing about this is that it's using exactly the same stuff at the back end to send this email, receive the email, store the email, that it does for any other mechanism. So the same way as I showed you with the calendar before, it's doing exactly the same thing with the Graph API. Now, let me quickly show you what happens here, because then I want to finish up, which we've got to do in 1 minute, I know. What's happening here is, when I click the button in main page of demo CS, and we hit the on mail button, clicked. Basically, I go and find out what the email address is, and I do a compose and send mail async. So let's see what that does. Compose and send mail async simply goes off and says, go and get a list of the users separated by semicolons, all good, and then go and get this authenticated client. Now, I've got an authentication helper that uses the Microsoft authentication libraries that does this, really also only about 2 or 3 lines of code, well, maybe 10 lines of code. And then it says, go and create a new message. Now, message is one of the SDK, one of the graph SDK objects. And it's got a body, and the item body's got content, and what type it is, and the subject, and the recipient list. And then it says, graphclient.me.sendemail, here's the email, and then should it save to send items? Yes. And then do an async. If it works, if it doesn't, and we can catch it. This is the cool thing, though, is it's just .NET code and all strongly typed, really nice. The nice thing about that is I pinched all of this code from a place you guys can find it as well, graph.microsoft.com/docs/getting-started/UWP. And, of course, there's a getting started for all sorts of other things as well if you want to do stuff with ASP.NET or whatever else. All right. Heaps of great resources. So, graph.microsoft.io, remember I talked about documentation and changelog in the Graph Explorer and getting started. The GitHub account is awash with many samples and SDKs and the tooling, including that SDK creation tool. The main Office developer landing page, if you want this free Microsoft account, by the way, dev.office.com/devprogram. Again, there's a link to it from that main spot. Heaps of great sessions from Ignite in the US. Again, these slides will all be available to you guys. If you have things that you want to be able to send the team about giving them feedback, then do that through the Office SP User Voice, and then heaps of support options on Stack Overflow on Twitter. I'm going to skip over those questions for a sec because I do want to just finish off with this story. Remember remember Nathan and the drivers? What we ended up doing is we wrote them an application that they use to go and do their deliveries, but also has a place where they can set their availability, which goes back into a shared calendar on the Office 365 site of the pizza shop. When the availability is set and the roster's set, the application at the pizza shop end automatically sends an invite to them to their calendars, which they can refuse or accept. And once it's accepted, that's cool. If things need to change, then they get a notification automatically because it just changed in a single point of truth, and all of the infrastructure for sending this stuff out is already there. So now instead of our 80%, we're more like 100% of the time people are in the right place when they're supposed to be there, which is pretty, pretty neat. So I'm going to leave you this thing. I really want you to think about how you can give your apps Office 365 superpowers. And the best way to do it is start at graph.microsoft.io. Thanks very much.